Hare Krishna. Welcome. Today, I'm going to talk about the five components of true knowledge. Yesterday was a very sacred day, holy day. It was Gita Jayanti. This is the anniversary of the day the Bhagavad Gita was spoken in Kurukshetra. So the Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Krishna to Arjuna just before a big battle between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. The Pandavas' throne, rightful throne, had been usurped by the Kauravas, their cousins. So it was an internecine struggle. And when did this happen, you ask? The date of the battle of the Kurukshetra and the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita was 3067 BCE. Long time ago. So how many years ago was that? If you're counting, 5083 years to yesterday. So right at the beginning of the battle, Arjuna said this to Krishna: Senayor ubayor madhye raktam sthapayame chuta yavad etan nirikshe ham yodukaman avastatan. Please draw my chariot in between the two armies, for I wish to see who has come to fight. Who had come to fight? The grandfather, his guru, his relatives, his friends, uncles, various people. And I won't get into that side of it, but he became very disheartened and decided not to fight. So this was the perfect moment in which he lost all composure due to weakness. He became confused and bewildered, and he surrendered himself to the lotus feet of Krishna, who was assuming the role of his chariot driver. And he surrendered to Krishna. Please instruct me. And from that point forward came the science of yoga, of the linking with the soul to God. This is not religion. This is yoga. There are five components of true knowledge, which we find where? In the Bhagavad Gita. Number one, Ishvara, God, the supreme controller. Number two, the jivas. What are the jivas? We are. The souls. Only humans? No. All souls. Insects? Plants? Fish? Birds? All of them. Correct. Number three, Prakriti. What is Prakriti? Nature. It is nature. There's material nature and spiritual nature. Kala. This is number four. Time. Kala is time. And number five, karma. What is karma? Action and reaction. If you understand these five things, my friends, and how they work in this world in which we live, you're out of here. You're on your way home. Back to Godhead. You don't have to come back here. Oh no, it can't be that easy. Oh yes. It is. It is. It's not that easy. But it's not that hard. You know, just understand these principles. So we will go over these a little bit for you today. Number one, Ishvara, God, the Supreme Controller. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. That this material nature is working under my direction. All of material nature, whatever happens in the material world, is working under the direction of God. And some days you're worried. You read the newspaper, you see what's going on in the world. You look at your government. So many different things are happening. And you become worried. You become fearful. That's a human reaction. Is that okay? Yeah, it's understandable. But don't worry. They're not in control, those humans. Or they think they are. That's not what Krishna says. He says, I am controlling the material nature. Yeah, he lets them play around in the playground and do stuff. He does. Who has the last say? Maya Jakshena Prakriti. Krishna does. So, made up of Saracharam, the movable and the immovable beings. Right? So, some people say there is no God. God is not in control. There was a big bang, there was an explosion, all the pieces landed, here we are. And then the amoeba started to move, or the tadpole came out of the ocean. You know, various theories that science puts forth. And isn't it wonderful how we're all here? Well, we beg to differ. So, if someone has never been on an airplane before, for example, and you see this huge piece of machinery flying through the sky, it's pretty amazing. Oh my God, that machine can fly. Yeah and no. But those of us who have been on airplanes, which is most of us, I dare say, we know without the person in the cockpit, known as the pilot, that plane won't go anywhere. It needs a sentient being to control it and make it do all the wonderful things that it can do. It's not happenstance. It's not an accident. It's not haphazard. There is an intelligence behind it at the controls, the pilot. But yet these wonderful, massive planets can hurl through space in predetermined orbits. That's an accident. No one's in control over that. That's haphazard business. It just occurs. Really? Are you putting me on? Do you sincerely believe that? Yes, I do. Okay. Two or three more lifetimes for you, my friend. No, I don't actually say that to him, but, you know, it's going to be a few yet, isn't it? Okay. We build and control airplanes and rockets, and God controls planets and galaxies. Pretty much the same thing, isn't it? No, it's different. Yeah, we can build a few things, you know. Okay, so what's the difference between God and living entities? I've said this many times, you've heard it many times. Kshetrajna Kshetrapi Mam Vidhi. You should know that there is a jna, a knower, in the kshetra, in the body, in each body. There is someone who is aware of it. You are the knower of your body. You have consciousness of your body. Do you have consciousness of the persons sitting next to you and what's going on in their mind and their body? No, you do not. God, Krishna, has consciousness of his own body and mind and ours as well. He has consciousness of all minds, all bodies, all beings. kshetrajna. That's the difference. One of the differences between God and the living entities. That's number one. Number two, jivas. The souls. The controlled living entities. The controller and the controlled. Well, we could ask, well, how did we get here in the first place? Do you remember how you got here? Yeah, you'll tell me, yeah, I came out of my mother's womb. Yeah, you did, but likely you don't even have a memory of it. But where were you before that? Before you entered your mother's womb as a soul, where were you? You don't know. Now let me give you a very simple example of how we got here. A child is asked to put away his toys and clean his room. And once he does that, his family plan to take him on this wonderful picnic to a beautiful park. And his mother tells him that she's cooked all his favorite dishes. All his favorite things, right? Does he listen? No. He doesn't listen. Keeps playing. Ignores them. Do they ask him once? Not usually. A few times. He ignores. Then the family leaves. And they go off to the park and they have a wonderful picnic. He's left at home. That's us. We're him. Because we didn't listen. Oh no. Come with us. Stay with God. Stay in the material, in the spiritual world. No. No. I've got my own agenda. I've got a better agenda. Here I am, running my agenda. Can you see me? And you get bewildered and confused and you lose things and you lose people and that's what happens to the child. Well, where's my parents? Where's the picnic? Where's my favorite foods? Up there. So, as souls, as jivas, we are part and parcel of God. The spiritual substance, the soul, the jiva, is pure spiritual substance. But we've become covered over by material consciousness and material body. So we can use an example of a nugget of gold, pure gold. That's God. We take a knife, we scrape off a few pieces of the gold, a few flakes. What is the difference in quality between the gold nugget and the gold flakes? There's no difference. It's pure gold. It's pure spirit. So we, like God, are pure spirit. But God is pure spirit in full measure. And we are in minute measure. And then Prabhupada also gives the example of the ocean being God, and a drop of water from the ocean has the same properties. H2O and some salt and whatever else. But we are not the ocean, we are the droplet. So that's how we are in relation to God. Because we are covered over in consciousness and we're seeing through the material modes, which we'll get to, it is as though we are seeing the world, or if you like, we are seeing our reality through rose-colored glasses. You know this expression? Seeing the world through rose-colored glasses, which means to see things as they are or not. Not as they are. is trying to make it out to be much better than it actually is. Well, you could say that's optimism. You could argue with me. Say, that's optimism. Yes, true. But what's the truth? This world is a place of birth, death, old age, disease, suffering. And no one wants it. So we're pretending that this is it. This is the best place to be. We're in no better situation than this. That's called illusion, Maya. Again, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sa Chara Charam. Material energy, the material nature is working under my direction. So we also attempt, while we are here, to control the material energy. Do we not? Do we not make many plans and arrangements to control things, to better our lives? Yes, we do. The tendency to control things that we find in our nature is there because it's in God's nature. So we are little gods, little sparks of the Godhead. So the desire to control or orchestrate or organize, there's nothing necessarily wrong in and of itself, because it's a natural tendency within our nature. So what's the problem then? The problem is, what's the motivation behind it? Is it spirit, true self, that's motivating your decisions and your plans? Or is it ego? That's what you have to figure out. If you are truly an enlightened soul, all of your actions, plans, orchestrations will be motivated by self, by pure self, by soul, by spirit. If you are not yet a realized soul, then many of your actions may yet still be motivated by ego. What's in it for me? Ego. Or they say ego. E-G-O. Edging God out. Let's move God out of the way so we can get some things done around here. And how many lifetimes have you been doing that? This is the next question. Are you tired of it yet? No, I'm still going pretty strong. Okay. That's good. You keep at it there until you get tired. Then we can step into spirit. Not a moment sooner. Okay. Prabhupada says this really beautifully. He says, I've paraphrased it. Material consciousness is founded upon two psychological beliefs. One is that I am the creator, and two is that I am the enjoyer. I am the creator, and I'm the enjoyer. But actually, the Supreme Lord is both the creator and the enjoyer. And the living entity, being part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, is neither the creator and the enjoyer in relation to God. He is supposed to be the cooperator. What a concept. The cooperator, the co-creator, if you will. The cooperator. He is the created and be enjoyed. We have the male principle and the female principle. When we apply the male and the female principle to this, God is in the position of being the male principle, being the ultimate creator. No? If he's the ultimate creator, then ultimately all his creations are for his enjoyment. And we, by definition, are the energy of God, the created, and that's the term prakriti. The word prakriti in Sanskrit is a feminine or a masculine word. Tell me. It's feminine. The material energy is feminine. All of us are feminine in that sense. God is masculine, we are feminine. He's the enjoyer, we are the enjoyed. Does that mean there's no enjoyment in it for us? No. It's still our nature to enjoy, to be happy, to be joyful, to have desires, to have needs met. Is there something wrong with that? No. It's part of our nature. There's only something wrong with it if it is divorced or removed from God. Then there's something wrong with it. Because then it's motivated by ego, right? Isha Upanishad. Isha Vasyam Midam Sarvam Yat Kincha Jagachang Jagat. God has created everything in the material world. So therefore he is the supreme person and the supreme enjoyer. So the example Prabhupada gives, a part of a machine must cooperate with the whole machine. A part of the body must cooperate with the whole body. The hands, legs, eyes, and so on are all parts of the body. But they are not actually the enjoyers. When it comes to feeding the body, giving it fuel so it can sustain, the stomach is the enjoyer of the body. So the hands can say, oh, that's it, I'm on strike. There's enough unions on strike here, and the hands may just join right in and say, no, I am. If I'm not going to get to enjoy this food directly, that's it. I'm not going to put the food in the mouth so it can go down into the stomach. I refuse. I'm on strike. It's absurd. So we need cooperation. Parts of the machine must cooperate to make the machine run like a car. And the parts of the body must all cooperate together to satisfy the body and the needs, the desires of the mind. Now, that's number two. Number three, prakriti, material nature. What is material nature? This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita to be inferior, appara prakriti, and the inferior nature, and the living entity is described as the superior nature. Para prakriti. Apara and para. Inferior, superior. The material energy, because it's dense, it's inert, it has no consciousness, is said to be inferior. As we know, all the things that Mother Earth gives us and all the elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, we as conscious beings can take them and use them and manipulate them and make things out of them, what grow things, all these things we can do. Right? So we are superior in that sense. Prakriti is always under control, whether it is inferior or superior in the material realm. It's still under control. Prakriti is female. She is controlled by the Lord. Prakriti is always subordinate, predominated by the Lord, who is the predominator. The living entities and material nature are both predominated, controlled by God. According to the Gita, the living entities, although parts and parcels of the Supreme, are to be considered Prakriti. Okay, well, we sort of said that before. Aparayam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param jivabhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. The translation for that Bhagavad Gita verse is, this material nature is my inferior Prakriti, but beyond that is another Prakriti, the superior Prakriti, the Jiva Bhutas, the living entities. The Jivas, or the souls, the living beings, are sometimes called Tatastha Shakti. You know what that means? Shakti is energy. Tatastha means borderline. And the example is given of the shore of the ocean. The shore of the ocean, there's sand coming together with water. Right? At any given moment, which one's which? You can see them, but they keep intermingling, interacting. So that means, as Tatastha Shakti, as how do they say it? Borderline such and such. They call it, well, see, borderline such and such. That's us, we're borderline. Sometimes we're in spiritual consciousness and sometimes we're in material consciousness. That's what it means. We get influenced. Material nature itself is constituted by three qualities, three modes of nature. Sattva, goodness or contentment. Rajas, passion or desire. And tamas, ignorance or delusion. These are the three modes of material nature. Above these modes, there is eternal time. A combination of these modes of nature under the control of eternal time, then we get activities, karma. These activities are being carried out from time immemorial. In other words, it's hard to say when we began our moment of action and reaction here in the material world. They usually divide it into simply two categories, liberated souls and conditioned souls. We are all conditioned souls unless you're an avatar. If you're an avatar or a part of God directly and you came down here to help people, to free people, then okay, you may be a liberated soul known as a Jivan Mukta, liberated soul. But everybody else is a conditioned soul. Okay. Prabhupada mentions that apart from karma, all the rest of these, Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, Jiva, the living entity, Prakriti, nature, and Kala, time, are eternal. Now, time in the material world, the time factor and the measurement of time, when he says the time is eternal, it means it's eternal in that it keeps the creation that gets created here in the material world is created, it maintains for a time, then it is wrapped up, it is dissolved, and it goes into a state of dormancy or limbo. Like what? Like what season? Like winter. Right? Not long ago, all the trees were filled with leaves and everything was beautiful and vibrant. And then the leaves turned all these wonderful colors. The wind blew them away. And now, for the next few months, we go into a state of dormancy. Same? No? I have to laugh, you know. Expansion, contraction, expansion, contraction. I mean, what else is there in the world? You know, watch your lungs if you don't believe me. I say to my clients something. Yeah. So, yes, they tell me, you know, we did 10 million gross this year. So I said, well, that sounds like a good year for you. Next year, we will do our projections are 15 million. Huh. Expansion. And the year after that, expansion. And the year after that, expansion. Is that how Mother Nature behaves? I haven't seen that. Expansion, contraction. And then, 1 year or two, we didn't meet our projections. And I smile. You didn't meet your projections this year? Funny that. What happened? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with them making their projections, but come on. Pay attention. See what's going on around you? Does the economy only get bigger and better all the time? Well, we know for sure that that's not the reality. Is it? In any country, anywhere. Yet people act as if, yeah, that's the reality. Rock and roll, here we go. No, it's not. Wake up. Expansion, contraction. Material world is not accepted as false. It's accepted to be temporary. It's temporary. Okay, so the effects of karma could be there for who knows how long. Where we are having karmic reactions to our actions. Some are really nice. Some are somewhere in the middle, so-so. And some are just absolutely terrible, tragic. Who knows when it began? But we can change the results of our karma, our activity. This depends on our degree of enlightenment. That's how you do it. You become enlightened. And you can then change your karma. Will it work if you're in the mode of ignorance? And doing things that are destructive to yourself and to others? Or doing nothing? That's the mode of ignorance. Will it work? No. Will it work in the mode of passion when you're running around chasing desires? I know I'll be happy if I just get this and this and that for Christmas. If I get lots of Christmas presents, I know I'll be happy for at least a week and a half. Chasing the will of the wisp, chasing your tail, chasing desires. Is that a state of enlightenment? No. We have to come to the mode of goodness. And we have to become happy within ourselves. You know, my wife said something to me the other day. It was really poignant, in fact, yesterday. She said that, you know how we always go from one thing to another, now, especially now that we've got smartphones? Ooh, isn't that a blessing? We're always directing our attention outside of ourselves. Where do we find our creative potency out there? As little creative beings, we're little creative beings. We established that. Where do we find the impetus and the inspiration for our own personal creations? Out there, you say, well, yeah, I saw this and that. Yeah, right. But if you're going to actually create something, where are you going to find that? Within yourself, no? If you're a designer, where do your ideas come from? You could say, I was influenced by so-and-so and so. Yeah, okay, that's nice. But if you're going to do an original design, where's it going to come from? From within you. But how can it come from within you when you're busy out there all the time, getting stimulated by so many different things? She was telling me, my wife was telling me, in relation to children getting bored. And the psychologist that she was listening to was saying, it's good for them to be bored. What? Oh my God, I don't want my child to be bored. I'm going to take them to a ballet lesson and a piano lesson and to football and to this and to that. And God forbid he had a moment to himself. He might become bored. Which means he might have time to become creative. You need time to be creative. How many of you as children were spent a lot of time by yourselves and made up games and used your imaginations and entertained yourselves for hours on end? Maybe you had toys, maybe you had no toys, and still you did that. How many of you did that? There you go. Half of us did that. And let me ask you, did you have a cell phone? Did you have a mobile phone to do that? No. Really? How about that? So if we need time to be able to go within ourselves to create something in the world, don't you want to create something nice? Do we also then, on the next level, need time to go and talk to God and meet God and get to know him and hang out with him and spend time with him and develop your relationship to God? Doesn't that happen within as well? Little creator, big creator. Right? Seems obvious, but no. We're losing it, my friends. It's slipping away. It's slipping away out of our fingers. I'm not criticizing you. It's slipping away. If you're sitting down at dinner at a restaurant and you're doing this and you're at dinner with six people, you're not here. You're here. In the phone. That's where you are. Be present. Be present. All right. Krishna is sometimes called Triadish. Triadish. What does that mean? Please. What does three mean? Three. The Irish say it, tree. Three, tree. T-R-I. Adhish. What does Adhish mean? The Lord. The Lord of threes.
He's the Lord of Threes.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Like what? Well, in this verse that I pulled out of the Bhagavatam, he's the Lord of Chit Shakti, Tatastha Shakti, and Maya Shakti. Chit Shakti is spiritual energy. Tatastha Shakti, we already talked about it. The borderline crew, that's us. We're the borderline crew. And Maya Shakti, material energy, right? Do you know the law of threes? Do you know there's a universal law of threes? So what are they? Let's mention a few. How about past, present, future? All right. Do they have that in the spiritual world? No. Just down here. Only available in your material sphere. Past, present, future. How about beginning, middle, end? How about Srishti, Stiti, Pralaya? Creation, maintenance, dissolution of the material creation. How about Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva? Right? How about Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas? Mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. How about the heavenly planets, the earthly planets, and the hellish planets? How about the Devas, the Naras, and the Rakshasas? In Vedic astrology, wherever your moon sign is, we look at the constellation, the nakshatra that the moon is placed in, and it is determined whether it's Deva, Nara, and Rakshasa. The Devas are the gods, the godly beings, or the ones that gravitate toward higher consciousness. Nara or Manusha means what? Men, humans. And Rakshasa means demons, so we don't have to be so intense with our words. We can say materialistic people, manipulative people, people who are overly controlling. They're not all full-blown demons. So there's law of threes. How about Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagawan? Is that the law of threes? How about Father, Son, and Holy Ghost? This is law of threes. Extremely important law in the universe. You can add to that list. You can go home and fill out your page if you like. I invite you. Okay. Kala, number four, time. The duration of existence of the material creation. That's what we're talking about. Here's Krishna's words, Bhagavad Gita. Kala kalat kalayatam aham. Among subduers, I am time. Aham evakshaya kalo. I am inexhaustible time. Aham adish chamadyangcha bhutanam anta eva cha. I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all beings. Kalosmi loka kshaya krit pravridho lokan samahartum iha pravritaha. Time I am, destroyer of the worlds, and I have come to engage all beings. These are all Krishna's words about time. This last quote, Bhagavad Gita 11, chapter 11, text 32, was spoken by, what's the guy's name now, the scientist?
Oppenheimer.
When? During, just before the end of the Second World War, when they created successfully the what?
Atomic bomb.
The atomic bomb. Oppenheimer, who was in charge of the entire project, quoted the Bhagavad Gita. Time I am, the destroyer of all the worlds, and I've come to engage all beings. He knew what he created. Huh? The ultimate destroyer is Krishna. God. So, in three-dimensional time, we have past, present, future. All right? And this is the world of time and space, correct? In three-dimensional space, we have height, width, depth. Right? What did I just draw there for you? A box. Guess who's caught in the box, my friends? You are all boxed in. All of us. When are you going to get out of the box, is my question. Hello? I want out of the box. I'm boxed in. In the spiritual world, do we have the measurement of time? No. Do we have the measurement of space like we do here, three-dimensional space? No. We've also learned, we learned from Shastra, and we learn also from science recently, that there are subtler and subtler dimensions. Not necessarily limited to three-dimensional experience, perception, right? In the spiritual realm, it's infinite dimension. I can't explain it to you because I can't grasp it. I wish I could. If I could, I guess maybe I wouldn't be sitting here. Maybe I would. I don't know. So, we live in the box. Past, present, future. As creative beings, which we are, we establish that. In what perception does our creative power lie? In past, in present, or in future? Tell me. Present. Anybody disagree? The present. Now. Right? But what do? Do we focus on the present? Yes. A little bit from time to time. Maybe you're with me now. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're thinking about what they're going to serve for prasadam. I'm a bit hungry. I wonder what they're serving tonight. Or maybe you're paying attention. We're all together here in the now. Because if you're not in the now, you can't create beings. Nothing. So what do we do instead of being here in the now? How do we know we're not in the now? Because we're... confusion. We're regretting the past. Oh, I wish that would have... oh. I really liked her. I wish she didn't leave me. I hated that job, but I loved the money. Whatever. And we're always going over the past. How many times since you've been sitting here with me has the past crept into your mind, a memory? I'm not criticizing you, but just how many times? Whoa, a few. Or the future. We're worrying. We're regretting the past and we are worrying about the future. We are in fear of the future. Right? Well, what if this doesn't happen? What if he doesn't call me? Then what? What if I don't get the job? What if, what if, what if, what if? Are you here now? Are you in your creative power as a minor creator here in the scheme of things? No, you're not. Your power is now. Your consciousness must be here and now. When? All the time. Can you work toward future goals? Yes. You can. But your consciousness must be in the present. That is where your creative power lies, my friends. In the spiritual realm, there's no time, no space limitations, only now. So somebody sent me an email, and they're having a big conference in San Diego. I don't know how I get on these mailing lists, but I do. You know, sometimes you get on these mailing lists. And the name of this conference is the Revolution Against Aging and Death Convention in San Diego, California. And here's a couple of quotes from two of the PhDs, the doctors, that are conducting the conference. This is Dr. Aubrey de Grey. Dr. Aubrey de Grey says, a lot of people alive today are going to live for 1,000 years or more. Is he projecting into Dwapar Yuga? Did nobody tell him it's Kali Yuga? 100 years, 120 if you're real lucky, Kali Yuga. No, we're going to overcome death. The next doctor here, Bill Andrews, says, I want to cure aging. So he's right about aging. It's a disease. It's a material disease connected to the material body. There's a cure of aging already. It's called moksha. Liberation. I'm not sure how Bill's going to go about it, but I'll tell you how they plan to go about it. The latest and the greatest is what? Stem cell treatment. And they are applying stem cell treatment and getting all kinds of amazing results and turning back aging, or if you will, the deterioration of the body. Do I think they're all ultimately going to turn Kali Yuga upside down? I don't think so. But wait a second. Where do stem cells come from? Tell me. Where do they get stem cells? From fetuses, doctor. Do they not?
Yes.
Ishwar is a doctor. From fetuses. Well, where do they get the fetuses? From abortion. Ah, problem solved. Kill off the child in the womb. We're going to have an endless supply of stem cells. You're creating a lot of bad karma here, my friends. Maybe there's a few beings that are still born dead, we can get some stem cells from. But in America, abortion is like an industry. I know, I lived there 30 years or more. Can't remember now. Long time. It's an industry. There's no limit to how many fetuses you can get. They want to make it legal here. There's more fetuses, more. Progress. It's not progress. We're going backwards. We're creating negative karma. As soon as a fetus begins to grow, it cannot grow without the presence of what? Soul. The jiva. Nothing grows without a jiva. Not even a blade of grass. Well, we're not sure when it's actually a human. It's growing. There's a soul in it.
whether you're sure or not. Things don't grow without the presence of spirit. When you see a dead body whom you loved, you don't want to hang out with that dead body anymore because that person, that soul, is gone. This is not rocket science. This is pretty straightforward stuff. Okay, almost there. Number five, karma. Action and reaction. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is residing in everyone's heart as Ishwara, the controller, in the form of Paramatma. What is Paramatma? Supreme Soul, Super Soul. He is giving freedom to the living entity to act as he desires. You are getting sanctioned to do what you want to do. You have free will. That is God's gift to you. You could be a big nonsense and do all kinds of things, or even hurtful things. Still, you have the freedom to do it. Because God does not manipulate you. He does not do that. Okay. The Paramatma speaks to us through... We must learn to listen to God in the heart. How does... You say, well, I'm listening, I don't hear anything. Hello, I don't hear anything. How does the Paramatma speak to us? Through our sense of morality, truth, ethics. I don't have to tell you, don't go over there and kill that person. Please, don't kill that person. Do I have to tell you that? If I did, you go like, what is he talking about? Well, of course I'm not going to do that. No, of course you're not. Because we all understand that. It's in the core of our being. It's God in the heart. And intuition. Intuition. That's how Paramatma speaks to us. And the more you listen, the better you listen, the closer you become to God, then the words start appearing. You hear them. Whether it's words or feelings or, the answers will come once you get to that platform. Believe me, they will come. Due to ego, the living entity becomes confused and does not listen to the Lord within his heart. He makes a determination to act in a certain way, and he becomes entangled in the actions and reactions of his own karma. He becomes oh my God, I wish I could do all this over. I didn't know all that was going to happen. Yeah, now you're entangled. I don't know how to get out of this. How can I extricate myself from the web that I have spun? How? Well, let's take an example. I love these children examples. Because you can't miss them. The child's in a shopping mall with his father, who tells him, don't wander off. Stay close. So many people, especially this time of year, it's crazy how many people are out there shopping, right? Does the child listen to his father? No. He wanders off. And he becomes what? Lost. And all he sees are all these big people walking around in all directions, and he doesn't know where his father is, and he begins to get extremely fearful. Daddy, daddy, daddy. Right? He becomes entangled in a web of his own making. Why? Because he didn't listen. Because he didn't listen. Okay. Vedic astrology, which I've done now for 39 years. is a map of your karma. It shows you strengths, weaknesses. It shows you, oh, so clearly your life lessons. It shows you, oh, so clearly your karma. Good karma, bad karma. And karma that can be changed, which I'm going to mention here. It's extremely valuable information. Especially when you're going through a really difficult time in your life, then it can tell you pretty much accurately how long that will last. And believe me, that is a great blessing for many people. Because they don't know how long is this going to keep happening to me. Another 2.5 years. Really? Pretty much, yeah. Or it'll be over by January. Oh, good. So there are three kinds of karma. Prarabdha, Sanchitta, and Kriyamana. Three kinds. Prarabdha karma is past. It's the past. Karma which is already manifest or which must manifest. Karma which cannot be changed. Like what? Like your bone structure. Like your DNA. Like your gender. Although they're that's being challenged nowadays. Like your gender. Who your parents were. Can you change that? pretty tough. You can try and get yourself a new pair. But, you know. Some prarabdha is also pre-scheduled life events which cannot be changed. That's prarabdha karma. Sanchitta karma, this is the key one. Because this is the one, when I work with my clients, this is the one we focus on. It's what can be changed. Behaviors, beliefs, tendencies that you want to change that actually can be changed. And that's part of your lesson. So, sanchitta, which means frequently practiced or exhibited or accumulated karma. And all karma is sangskaras, but here, that's a real good example of sangskara, or an imprint, impression, right, upon the mind. Karma which exists in the subtle body, the mind and intelligence, in a seedling or unmanifest form. Like the habits of the mind, it starts as a seed that forms thoughts, then goes to words, then deeds. Thought, word, action. Right? It's like you saying, oh, God, I wish I could stop doing that. I don't want to do that anymore. I keep doing it, for example. So, through the process of yoga, which is what we are here for, that's what we do here, meditation, mantra, even psychotherapy, all of these aim at reshaping or removing sanchitta karmic tendencies. Right? So that's the key one. And the third one is kriyamana. So, sanchitta karma is present. Prarabdha, past, sanchitta, present, and kriyamana, future. Kriyamana means being done or is in the process of being done. What you're doing now to create your next body in your next lifetime, or to wrap it up and not create another lifetime, get off the wheel of repeated birth and death. So, kriyamana, future karma, which is being generated through present action. For example, investing your money in a stock or in a real estate investment and knowing that hoping the return will come later. Or you're choosing friends. The way you choose friends, that's kriyamana karma. Have you ever chosen a friend and then later you thought, oh my God, I think I made the wrong choice here. especially when you look at your phone and it says you just got 12 calls from your friend, for example. Do you choose your associates as carefully as you would your financial investments? So your behavior in this lifetime is an investment for your future.
Okay.
These are the five essential components of truth, knowledge, from the Bhagavad Gita. When we come to realize that everything we do should be done for God's pleasure, or we should co-create with God in harmony, your plan with God's plan, and not act out of ego, act out of true self. Ego, we think, may benefit ourselves, but oftentimes the actions generated from ego may not benefit others. Or they may not benefit you, but you think they do because it feels good at the moment. So when we raise our consciousness, we include God in the equation, and we work in harmony with God in a loving reciprocal bond. That's the highest degree of yoga, and that is the yoga of love and devotion, known as bhakti. All right. I hope this was of value. I thank you for your kind attention. Any questions? You've been very patient with me. Any questions, comments, interjections, objections?
Yes. How do you mitigate the effects of Saturn with a major Saturn transit and the fifth cycle of Saturn?
I'll talk to you about that. You're getting very specific here. You can pacify negative planetary influences through mantra, through the giving in charity, through yajna, Agnihotra, Homa, fire sacrifice, and through puja, through offering mantra and various objects to planetary deity. Or you can supersede all of that and go to Krishna. Because who's controlling the planets? Oh, it's Krishna. We established that at the beginning, I believe. So closer you get to Krishna, the more effective you will become at this mitigating negative karma or challenging karma and attracting, well, I don't want to say good karma, attracting good experiences. Let's say it like that. Okay? Yes?
I'm not right here on yoga and religion.
Well, I like to sum it up simply like this. Religion is a relationship with dogma, and yoga or spirituality is a relationship with God. Can there be people who follow religions, any religion, that are also actually very spiritual people? Absolutely. I've met many of them around the world. So there's no such thing as one religion has the corner on the market. Oh, you know, and people who are too extreme in their religious beliefs believe that
we're all going to heaven, you're going to hell. You know, how many times did you hear that? Spirituality is inclusive. It's not exclusive. Religion is exclusive. We're right, you're wrong. This is the only way, you can't do it your way. When did Prabhupada say that? Prabhupada never said that. He says, oh, offer everything to God. He said, well, I don't really like to think about God as Krishna. That's fine. Then you think about God how you think about God, but establish your relationship with God. We like to think of Krishna because Krishna is the all-attractive personality of Godhead. The little blue guy with the flute.